give my heart in gratefulness. I live my life to seek your face. I live my life to seek your face.
Sing it one more time. Sing it to yourself.
Such a beautiful chant to be able to share in together. I just have to say I really resonate with the mission statement of this community, to live love and uplift lives. And I would just like to invite that uplifting of lives starts with you and with me. As we are uplifted, we can share that upliftedness with others. And so what I'd like to do is just lead us in a meditation that, you know, when we think about love, I'm reminded of the quote by the Sufi mystic Rumi, who said, "Your task is not to seek for love, but to seek for the barriers that you've put up to love."
Whoa. That just changed my life, seriously.
See, love, love is not something to go out there and get. Love is not something even to really deserve, because to deserve love implies earning. I better not screw it up. Love is something that you and I intrinsically and inherently are. And the human experience with ourselves and with others is just that journey back to that love that's already there. So I just invite you to take a moment and allow your eyes to close, or they can just softly focus in a downward gaze, and just take a few nice deep breaths. Just allow yourself to settle and arise. Maybe notice the experience of breathing in and breathing out. Notice the experience of sitting in the chair and having your feet on the floor. Just allowing your awareness now to go within. And maybe in your mind's eye, envisioning that white light of love. You may want to call to mind the many others who love you, and inviting in and coming back to that love that's already there. Maybe it's family members, friends, could be a pet, ancestors, spirits, nature, God. But just allow yourself to know the experience of being held and supported and surrounded by love. And then I'd like to invite you to call to mind a situation or maybe a person that's causing difficulty in your life. And if it's too painful or too difficult, you don't have to. You can just return and just allow yourself to be held in love. But the author James Finley says that love protects us from nothing and yet mysteriously sustains us in everything. And when love touches suffering, it turns that suffering into mercy. So maybe, just maybe, can you touch that suffering in your life with love? There's nothing to do, there's nothing to change, there's nothing to fix, just simply to be present. I offer these words from the poet Jeff Foster. Says, friend, the ache you feel today is not a mistake. There's no shame in what you're going through. Come out of the mind and into the body now. Send attention deep into the raw sensations in your belly, your chest, your throat, head, neck, shoulders. Dress today's wounds with presence. Breathe into the sadness. Offer the anger oxygen. Infuse the fearful one with fearless fascination. Don't try to fix the burning. It's not yours to fix. Don't try to get rid of it. The heart doesn't understand get rid of. Don't even try to transmute it. That's not your job. Your only job is to love what is here. And your own inability to love and to have courage or no courage today, to be as present as you can possibly be and not one ounce more. The ache in you is the place where alchemy longs to happen. And just coming back to your breath, to your seat, allowing your awareness to expand back out to the room, to the sounds, the other people, today. And as you're ready, just taking a few more nice breaths and gently opening your eyes.
Seek your face. I live my life. life to seek your face.
One more time. Let's feel it.
Thank you, Julie, and all of you for just setting such a beautiful table here. And I just really want to tell you what a joy it is to be here today and to be on the receiving end of just the love and warmth that you've shown this guy from Seattle. I know. I didn't bring the rain today. No, yes, yes. I'll just tell you, it rains all the time in Seattle. You wouldn't like it there at all, trust me. Am I a Seahawks fan? Well, let me tell you something. I've lived in Seattle 53 years. I was born in Wisconsin. So I am a Seahawks fan, except when they play the Packers. I can't help myself. I can't escape the inner cheesehead. You know, It's me. I guess I just have to, since we're getting real here, you know, I'm a University of Washington graduate. I am a Husky fan. I know I'm in rare company here. Yeah, people have told me, yeah, if I want to fit in Idaho, get Idaho license plates, and you know, I'm very open to that. Right now, I drive a black car with purple University of Washington plates on it. I've had friends tell me, "Watch out," you know. but all that aside, just the love and the warmth and the community of this community, boy, I have just really grown to appreciate in my time here, and I've just been just so grateful to Kelly and R and Justin and everybody in the back for supporting this service today. I'm so grateful that my beloved partner Lisa is here today with her mother Jerry and our good friends Pamela and Jerry. I hope it's okay to call you guys out. I don't mean to embarrass you. It just means so much. And yes, it is. It's wonderful. And having lived in Seattle all my life, you know, people talk about the Seattle freeze. You know, and I was always like, the Seattle freeze? They were pretty nice. Well, I have to say, after being in this community for a few weeks, I get it now. The friendliness and the warmth of everybody here, just walking down the street, walking in downtown, just people's willingness to say hi and engage and all of that has just been such a breath of fresh air. And I really like it here. it's really nice. Yeah, I started this year, you know, just sensing that, you know, I love Seattle. Two of my three kids are there. My middle daughter lives in Georgia. But I just, you know, sensed that maybe, you know, there was some kind of a change coming. And I've been through Coeur d'Alene a few times. And again, just being here, just such a beautiful community. The mountains, the trees, the rivers, nature, the people, all of that is just, it's just so very nice. It's very different culturally than Seattle. I've had people say, get out of Seattle, it's going to hell in a handbasket. And I don't experience that, you know, but it is very different. But those differences are good, and that's actually part of what I want to talk to you about today. Dennis, thank you for that very gracious bio. Just a little bit more about myself. I was born Catholic, actually, and raised nominally Catholic. My parents divorced when I was in third grade, and my dad. We lived with my dad. My mom was the one who left, and my dad was. Catholic all his life, went to Marquette University, Marquette High School, and was a Boeing engineer for 42 years, and had a real agnostic relationship with the Catholic Church. And so I grew up with that. We went to Mass on Christmas and Easter and did our obligatory thing, but I had no interest in religion at all. I was like, yuck. And then in college, I had a full-on born-again Christian experience. And that began what was to be a 28-year career as an evangelical Christian minister in some very large churches in the Seattle area. I was a part of what was then the largest church in Washington, 6,000 people. We had a Saturday night service, three Sunday mornings, a Sunday night, and a Wednesday night service. I mean, it was just a machine. And you know, I'm grateful for the things and the people and the friends that we did, you know, but inside I just wasn't a real happy person. And I realized, and looking back, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, but looking back, myself and my body just did not resonate with the theology, and particularly the exclusivism and the judgmentalism and the fear of other faiths and other religions. I just could never wrap my heart around that. And so 8 years ago, I left that, found myself at the Center for Spiritual Living in Seattle, and then by association, the Unity churches, and just found a real home here where there is a, and I hope that if you're not from a Christian background, that you feel welcome here as well. I consider myself, well, it's funny, people say, are you a Christian? You know, it's like I'm a part of some Christian groups that say I'm a pagan, I'm a heathen, you know, and I'm a part of some pagan heathen groups that say I'm way too Christian. So, you know, that's for you to decide. I don't know, but that's, you know, that's my background and my training is in that, you know, and so I consider myself essentially but not exclusively Christian. I think there's a difference between having faith in Jesus and having the faith of Jesus. I think of Jesus not as the one great exception, but as a great example, one of many great examples whose life and teachings are at least worthy of our consideration to do that. And so the things that I'm going to be offering you today are just that, they're offerings for you to take or not take. And I hope they're helpful to you. But I want to talk about polarities. And so as we begin this today, I'd like to just offer you this image, and I'd like to know what you see. You see a lot of stuff. A young woman? Who sees a young woman? Oh, and an old woman. Does anybody see an old woman? Yeah. Yeah, so what is it? An old woman or a young woman? Both, yeah. So is it possible that two things could be true or real at the same time?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. This was an example of a polarity. But I want us to just think for a little bit about the polarities that we experience in our life. You know, are you conservative or liberal? Are you an individual or part of the greater one? What about the polarity of freedom and responsibility? Faith and doubt? Mystery, clarity, surrender, or agency. Can you think of any others? What was it? Okay. Yeah, there's many of them, right? Many that we live with today. And the invitation here today as we think about polarities is to gain a sense of awareness and understanding of just how our mind, when faced with a polarity, wants to make sense of it and wants to take time. And so my intention today in talking to you about polarities is to, well, first of all, this quote from Anais Nin, I think, is helpful. She said, we don't see things as they are, we see them as we are. And again, this isn't an indictment. This isn't to say that, you know, anyone's bad or anyone's right or anything's wrong. But it's just simply to say that from our experiences, from our individuality and who we are, it's going to affect how we see things. The value of being able to hold polarities and navigate through them is that our eyes can change. One of my favorite quotes is from the French existentialist Marcel Proust, who said, "The real voyage of discovery is not in seeing new landscapes, but in having new eyes." I love to travel. It's great to see things, you know, but I think you can travel the whole world and go everywhere and have the same set of eyes, and you can go absolutely nowhere and live in the same place all your life and experience that thrill of travel and seeing with new eyes. That's the beauty of what polarities can offer us in our life. And so the intention here today, and as we think about polarities, is to expand and deepen the consciousness we have of oneness. of oneness. And in so doing that, to remember that a polarity is the state of having two opposite or contradictory tendencies, opinions, or aspects. And so what I hope to do here today is to just raise all of our awareness and all of our consciousness of polarities in our life, and to not eliminate them, or again, to not judge them or make you feel bad about them, but to welcome you and invite you into the mystery and the power of them to change your life. And so what I'm going to do is just offer you a little experience. We're going to consider one today, and then I'm going to leave you with three ways that you can navigate polarities in your life that I hope will be helpful to you. But what I'd like you to do right now is just take a moment again and just kind of get back into your body. I'm going to say two words, and as I offer these words, I just want you to notice if they land anywhere in your body, or if you have any thoughts or feelings that you associate with them, okay? So don't say anything. This is just for your own reflection. The first word is spiritual. Spiritual. Just take a moment and just see if you can sort of sit with that word a little bit and just notice your reaction to it, or if it lives anywhere in your body. If it doesn't, if this is new for you or doesn't make sense, that's cool too. And the second word I'd like to offer is religious. Religious. Can even notice the laughter, the chuckles. But just where does that sit in your body? How do you feel? What's your reaction to it? All right. So I'd love to hear from a couple people. Spiritual. How does the word spiritual land? Yes, and yes, yes.
It's funny that you mentioned those dudes. As soon as you said spiritual, I'm thinking, and the opposite is religious.
I know, yes. Because, you know where I'm going, yeah.
Because I've often said about myself a long time ago, even before I found Unity, I feel like I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen.
Sure, yeah. Yes, sir.
Spirit. To me, it's a state of being, mm-hmm. a level of consciousness, a level of power, and sort of your love coming, emanating your aura, mm-hmm. coming out at a certain wattage, mm-hmm. nano wattage or pico wattage.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had megawatts of power, we'd blow up.
A real sense of power, though.
Rules for that.
Yeah.
How is that conveyed to the population or to the environment?
Absolutely.
So in order to transmit the power, spiritual power, we have to have some degree of religion rules to of the game. And that's why it varies from individuals or groups of people throughout the population. We have Bosnians, we have Christians, we have Catholics, we have and agnostics, and all this, Quakers, and all this different levels of consciousness.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
interplay to make our society.
Awesome. Thank you. I see someone backing over here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I've thought about this before, and to me, spiritual is from the inside reaching out. Religion is from the outside trying to get in.
Interesting.
That's my view of it.
Good, yeah. Go ahead, yeah.
Is it me?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Spiritual was hit me in my heart.
Yes.
Religion hits me in my gut.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
Good, yes.
Well, I consider myself spiritual, so to me it embodies my whole body and who I am.
Mm-hmm.
when I think of religious, I think of being in a box.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think I saw a few hands over here.
As far as my body goes, I felt spiritual very deep into my heart, and then you said religion, I just got nauseous.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah.
I felt the same with both. I just felt love in my heart.
Mm-hmm. You too? Say more.
The whole row.
Say more. Yeah, what?
There's like a many paths kind of thing, and like some people gravitate to like structure and rules, and some people gravitate, like, you know, I was like a rebellious kid, like I'm more identified with the spiritual kind of thing, but I feel like they're the same path, the same destination.
So awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Uh-huh.
I felt the same both, because I can live in both ends, spiritual aspects and religious knowledge.
Yeah.
But spiritual is the fact that there's a fawn out in our window. That's truly spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's so, okay, one more. Yeah.
I feel like I'm deeply spiritual and I'm always seeking more spirit. And I also notice that I'm religiously devoted to all the things I discover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah. So just, you know, there's what's interesting is just such a vastness of experience, you know, and yet some common threads, you know, that are there, you know, the sense of being in the heart, the power, the energy of the word spiritual, and this heavy, oppressive, constricting, socked in the gut sort of experience with religion. I certainly can identify with that. You know, I have a lot of religious stuff from, you know, my childhood and even the church that I left and whatever, but what I'd like to, well, let me just first deal with the word spiritual. And again, there's many different meanings, so I'm not here to tell you what the one and only meaning is, but something that's useful for me. When I think of spiritual, I think of that longing and the experience of connection. We are here, and part of our beingness and in our humanness is this desire to connect with each other, to connect with nature, connect with the divine, sacred, transcendent, you know, again, whatever word, whatever term that you use, this longing and this experience of connection, I associate with spiritual. Religion is one of those words that lately I want to take back. I want to take back from the, you know, the harm that it's caused many people, and the harm is real. I'm teaching a class right now online on Wednesday nights through the CSL Seattle on religious recovery, making peace with your journey. And the stories I've heard, I mean, would make the enamel on your teeth curl. I mean, they are just it's awful. It's awful. But I'd like to connect this word religion to the mission and the vision of this statement here in this church. We live, love, and we uplift lives. So religion, the etymology of the word is real simple. It's the prefix re, which means what? Again, right? And ligion from ligio or ligament means, any ideas? To connect, attach, to bind, right? Yeah? So the fundamental meaning of the word is to again connect, to again attach, to again bind. So what if religion could be about binding again, connecting again, attaching again to love? Yeah. And so, yes, I mean, how many of you, again, know people, or maybe even yourself, say, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious? You know, yeah, you know, and I mean, you're here in church, you know, so I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but there's a whole bunch of other people that come to church, they break out in hives, right? You know, it's just like, that's too religious for me, and that's okay, I get it. When I was a minister, I've told my kids this, you know, I in my early days in the evangelical church, you know, we had this 52 Sunday a year club, you know, where if you were in church every 52 Sundays out of the year, you got a special award because you were committed, and I used to think, And true confessions, I mean, I can say this now, but part of my dis-ease, you know, as a pastor is as I was driving my way to church on Sunday mornings, I noticed families packing up to go to the beach, go to the park, or head up to the ski slopes. And I would be like, I want to go. Because maybe that's church too.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. And yet, you know, I mean, my kids, I've had a really it's been a challenging road connecting with my kids as I've gone through this deconstruction and reconstruction. And my kids have told me, you know, growing up, their experience of it, you know, was having religion forced down their throat. And I didn't wake up in the morning as a dad thinking, gee, how can I shove religion down my kid's throat? But I can because I'm a pretty intense guy. You know, I'm a Virgo, and I've got my, I think it's if I remember this right, I'm a Virgo, and I've got Mercury, Mars, and Venus are in Leo or something like that. Whatever. It's a lot of fire and a lot of passion, you know. So I'm a fiery, passionate guy, you know, and I can get really excited about something. And I'm aware that others can experience that excitement and that enthusiasm and that passion is a little overwhelming and overbearing, not just in religious, but in any things in life. And so I'm learning to just settle down, breathe, and be okay with that. But so much of what goes on in religious communities, I think, is, you know, what it's led me to believe, at least from my own experience, is that what goes on in religious communities is oftentimes well-intentioned, but really sorely misguided. And the hurt and the pain that it causes is real. But the good news is there's always hope. Love does find a way, you know, if we can be patient and make it happen. But part of this idea of imagining the possibility of being not spiritual, not religious, but maybe spiritual and religious, maybe, just maybe, our eyes, our minds, and our hearts could be made new to see things in a new way, to see church not just as something that's done here in this building, but church could be anything from a meal with family and friends, a walk in nature. What, the closet?
Yep.
A closet? Sure.
Closet.
My closet?
Anybody's
closet.
Your own closet, preferably.
I've not thought of that, but maybe. I've never thought of that. You know, listening to music. Summer concerts. Anybody here like going to summer concerts? I love them. My first half of my ministry career, I was a music director in my church, so I directed large choirs, large orchestras, bands, tours, you know, you name it. And why did I say that? Oh, going to a concert. Going to a concert could be church, you know? I mean, summer concerts in Coeur d'Alene, church. Maybe a stretch, but who knows, you know? Maybe it's journaling. Maybe it's exercise. Maybe a hot bath or shower or sitting in a hot tub. Maybe driving a car or a motorcycle. I like to fish, I like to hike, even golf. You know, could golf be church? I think so. Yeah. Okay. The idea here, though, is to know, and I appreciated the allusions to this earlier in the service, what is it that lights you up? What is it that brings you passion? What is it that brings you joy? And lean into that, live into that. And I love what Frederick Buechner says, that, you know, the place where your greatest passion meets the world's greatest need, that's calling. And one of the things that happens as we go through our life is that our perspective shifts from what do I want out of life to what does life want from me? It's almost the difference between, you know, like... Well, I'll get to that in just a minute, but it's this idea of stopping and making peace with what is it that excites me. And one of the harms that religious communities do, especially the community that I was a part of, is it says, you know, don't trust your heart, don't trust your passions because they're broken or they're sinful or they're wrong. And I just say to that, thank you and hogwash. If we are made in the image and likeness of the divine and the sacred, that means as the divine and the sacred is fundamentally love, so are you and so are me. And that love is constantly seeking expression. Now, does it mean that it's not without pain and struggle? No. This isn't just, you know, rainbows, butterflies, unicorns, dancing bears, clowns on motorcycles. Sometimes that experience of love is incredibly painful. And that's where I, you know, with the meditation this morning, could just offer you something that if you can allow the love that's within you to touch whatever suffering, whatever injustice, whatever thing is there, it just has this way of turning it into mercy. Another way of looking at it is to experience the transformation of the absurd to the sublime. You know, think of an absurdity in your life. Is it possible that what's ever absurd could become something sublime? So how can you navigate the polarities in your life? What I'd like to do now is offer you three intentions. I often think of intentions as prayer. What's your relationship with prayer? Too religious? There he goes, he's meddling with me again, huh? Yeah. My experience of prayer growing up, you know, as a Catholic boy, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Sure, you know that. And you know, the our Father who art in, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace. Yeah. But I think of prayer now more as an expression of the heart. And I love in the Bible, St. Paul wrote in the book of Romans that the Spirit intercedes on our behalf with groanings too deep for words. You know, and Jesus said, you know, when you pray, don't be like the people who like to stand up front and honoring all their oracle, you know, crazy words and all this kind of stuff. He said, go to God in secret, and God who's in secret will reward you. And that's okay. All right. Good. I get it now. Thank you. Message received. Yeah. But the idea here is that, and again, even in the tradition I'm a part of now, you know, at CSL, you know, we teach affirmative prayer, and we have this formula that we go through. God is, I am, I know, I am grateful, I release and let it go. You know, it's a nice little formula, way to pray, and it works. You know, when I was a pastor, we taught ACTS, adoration, confession, thanksgiving, supplication, you know, all these models. And they're useful and they're helpful, but you know, I think fundamentally prayer is really an expression of the heart. And another word that I like, sometimes it's more useful than prayer, is intention. And so I want to offer you three intentions that can help you navigate polarities. But before I do, I just want to say that these intentions can be dangerous. Dangerous prayers. Okay. Sometimes prayer can be thought of as flowery and sugary and all this kind of stuff, but I've learned in my life, these are dangerous. When you start intending these, watch out. Okay. Watch what life sends your way. And sometimes, and this is important, because I think we talked about this either too, you know, as we navigate through life and create our life and manifest our life and all of that, you know, it's really nice when we can decide what we want to do and then go out and do something and make something happen. But what happens when you get the diagnosis from the doctor and it's cancer? What happens when that loved one suddenly dies? What happens when the boss says, you're fired? What happens when a child, you know, wanders off or a pet dies? You see, it's important to think of that as we create and as we manifest, we are also created and manifested. There's a softness and a receiving to it. And so that's where I think faith comes in, or trust or surrender. Those to trust and to surrender is not to be some spineless victim, like, oh, I'm just whatever life happens, but it's to stand in love and trust and receive that what life is bringing you is good. And in the last year, I've had three doozies come my way, and it's taken me to the core of, okay, am I going to be a victim of this and wallow in pity, which comes very naturally and easy for me? Or can I have the faith? Can I be given the faith? Can I receive the faith? Can I receive the love from others to navigate what life is bringing my way and see all of it as good? Not always easy, not always not painful, but good. All right, so the first intention is, may I live with nothing to hide. May I live with nothing to hide. Ask yourself, from what am I hiding? From what am I running? From what am I afraid? What part of you are you not revealing? Joseph Campbell said this, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek. Maybe it's a jealousy. Maybe it's an insecurity. Maybe it's a passion or an anger. Whatever it is, the invitation here is to not hide. Now, this isn't an invitation to just be reckless and careless and thoughtless about it. No. But to start with yourself, from what am I hiding? What don't I want to see? Where don't I want to go? And I understand that there are things in our lives that are just too painful, and the time may not be right to do that, and that's okay. Listen to your heart. But the invitation here is to live with nothing to hide and to allow everything in your life to be touched by love. It can change. And you may find that polarity in your life, whatever it is, able to be reconciled. The second intention is this. May I live with nothing to prove. May I live with nothing to prove. Would you agree that we live in a prove-yourself society?
Yeah.
Prove yourself. Demonstrate yourself. Yep. You know, I've worked in business for a while when I've not been a minister. You know, they always say the best predictor of future performance is past performance. You know, and that's just, I get it. I understand where that comes from. And there's just something in me that goes, not yet, you know? Some of the best stories in life are people who've seen things in me that I didn't see in myself. And if they rated me on the basis of his past performance and didn't give me that chance, oh my gosh, I'd never have the grace to be able to stand in front of you here today. I was scared to death as a kid to talk publicly. And I still get nervous and uptight about it, whatever, you know? But I had a teacher in high school, my senior year pre-college reading teacher. I hated reading. I was a math science guy. I entered the University of Washington on a Navy ROTC scholarship. I was going to fly planes in the Navy and be an engineer and follow in my dad's footsteps. And then, you know, I got the call of God thing to be a pastor, and that's a whole other story. But this idea of having to prove ourselves, okay? Let's remember that we are human beings, not human doings. Oftentimes, we do thinking that that will change who we are. The invitation here is to come back and know who you are, to rest in who you are, to ground in who you are lovingly. And then from that place of resting and groundedness, do and make your offering to the world. All right, the last one. May I live with nothing to lose. May I live with nothing to lose. So much we could say. This is going to be its own message as well. There's a little practice I would offer you if you want to grow in your capacity to live with nothing to lose, and that's walk a cemetery. It's one of these weird things I like to do. And of all the things that I do as a minister, probably one of the most rewarding things I do are preside at funerals. And people look at me like, really? Yeah, because when you walk a funeral, when you walk a cemetery, you know, there's a lot of things that are there, but there are three things, generally speaking, that you see on every tombstone. A name, and then two numbers with a little dash between it. And how interesting, you know, that little dash represents the wholeness of your life. It's not going to, and at funerals, people aren't talking about how far up in the company somebody rose, how big their bank account was, where, you know, where they fell in the org chart or whatever, but it's who they are as a person. So, you know, when you live with nothing to lose, you can ask yourself, are you living for your resume or are you living for your eulogy? I want to live for my eulogy. If I'm honest, though, I can get swept up. I'm a guy, 58 years old. I get it, you know, pad that resume and make it look up. But there is a freedom. There is a life. There is a liberty when you live from nothing to lose. So nothing to hide, nothing to prove, nothing to lose. My invitation to you today is that those intentions would help you navigate whatever polarities you may be facing in your life. Again, here we've been talking a lot about spirituality and religion, but wherever you're feeling, facing that difficulty and that struggle, there's a little song that I listen to that's just beautiful. It says, I release control and surrender to the flow of love that will heal me. You know that song. All right. Amen. And so it is. Thank you.
Thank you, James. I asked him earlier if he goes by James, and he said, yeah. And I'm like, because we were over here going, I think we're going to call him Rev James. Anyway, that was a great talk. Thank you so much. So this is one of my favorite songs, and absolutely, it comes from the 80s, but it applies every decade. Thank you. has contentment been so hard to find? So many of us reaching out our hands to our brothers and sisters in so many lands. If ever kindness was needed, then it's crying out to us, the time is now. I want the peace and I want the love for all the world. People of joy, with children of hope for all the world. Spirit of light, I'll be a light that you shine through. 'Cause you are the peace and you are the hope for all the world. What's it gonna take before we show some charity? Compassion and mercy, the way it's meant to be. We'll take the time for the ones who truly need and pray for the nation that's out on the street. What man is greater than his brother? When in Jesus' eyes we're all the same. And I want the peace, I want the love for all the world. People of joy, with children of hope for all the world. Spirit of light, I'll be a light that you shine. And you are the hope for all the world. Learn a song of freedom and teach it to our children. Let the pipes of peace ring out, and pray the grace of God will lead.